Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of Trib Tower here till 5 a.m. And I would like to welcome to the show my next guest. Her name is Jen Marlowe, and she's a human rights activist, a filmmaker, and the co-author of a new book called I Am Troy Davis. And there's an event on Thursday, this coming Thursday at 6:30 at Chicago Temple, which is 77 West Washington, right across the street from Daley Plaza. It's open to the public. And it all has to do with this book that she has written about this true life court case that ended in an execution of a man who claimed to be innocent, Troy Davis. And he was put to death on September 21st, 2011. In the book, I Am Troy Davis recounts the case, which is fascinating and appealing to those who want to put an end to the death penalty. So let's welcome Jen Marlowe to the show. Jen, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Nick.
Absolutely. So tell me about your background. Where did you come from? When did you start writing and making films and things like that?
I come from Philadelphia originally, though it's been quite a while since I've lived there.
Mm-hmm.
And really, my writing and my filmmaking I view as tools of my activism. I was living for about 5 years altogether in Palestine and Israel. And it was really when I was there and I was doing peace work with youth at that time, dialogue-based reconciliation work. And that was when I really realized I needed to find tools in order to take more of a stand on some of the injustices that I was seeing. And so I developed filmmaking and writing as ways I could respond to things I saw going on in the world that I wanted to respond to.
What brought you to the Middle East?
I had originally gone on a fellowship from the Darroch Foundation, which a handful of Jewish Americans get selected to go on every year. Mm-hmm. And growing up as a Jewish American, I'd only ever heard one narrative to the story of Israel. That narrative never included what was happening with Palestinians. And so I began to discover more about that when I was there and have done a lot of work on that issue since then.
Was your opinion and your thoughts radically changed when you were there firsthand?
Absolutely, yes. Because you learn certain stories, certain mythology gets passed on to you, and then when you go, if you're willing to meet face to face with human beings and hear their stories and hear their narratives. And their realities, and for me as a Jewish American, that was a huge gap understanding the narrative of Palestinians. So of course, it very fundamentally changes so much because you realize that there's other human beings whose lives are equally important to anyone else's lives, and their needs and rights have to be considered. Mm. And actually, since we're talking about that, I'm actually also doing an event, a book reading on a book that I co-authored with the Palestinian, which is called The Hour of Sunlight, One Palestinian's Journey from Prisoner to Peacemaker, which I wrote with and about my former colleague, Samuel Jundi. And that event is in Oak Park at the Unity Temple. It's on Tuesday, tomorrow, December 3rd at 7 p.m., and it's co-sponsored by Unity Temple and Oak Park Temple.
Oh, that's great. Okay, good. I'm glad we were able to mention that. That's great. So that's later on tonight, actually. So we'll because technically it is Tuesday. So later on tonight.
I
just
want
to make sure everybody got that. One more time. Where is it again?
It's at Unity Temple in Oak Park, and it's at 7 p.m. on Tuesday, December 3rd.
Okay. And there you go. Now, we talked about activism. When one says the word activism, or at least in my case, the first thing that pops into my head is the decade of the 60s. And that seems like a normal response, don't you think, Jen?
Well, I mean, I wasn't around in the 60s.
No, so. I know. But I mean, historically, when someone talks about activism, the 60s really pop up. But activism is still as vital as it was back then. Don't you believe that, Jen?
Oh, absolutely. I think activism is a key part in making any democratic government system work. It's all about holding people accountable to the world that we want to see and working and striving to bring about that world.
What kind of activism now exists now in terms of like technology and things like that? How has activism changed over the years that you've observed, Jen?
Well, I think technology has been an incredible tool for activists. And I was in Bahrain, for example, about a year and a half ago, and I was somewhat embedded with the pro-democracy activists there during the uprising. And I was watching how Twitter was really, in some ways, the mechanism that was most widely used by the activists isn't to get word out about what was happening,
That's amazing. I mean, it really is.
Yeah, it was really cool to watch. But in a lot of ways, all the media and social media, those are tools of communication. But the real beating heart of activism, I think, is still the pounding the pavements, showing up, showing up when there are events, showing up when there's demonstrations, making our voices heard in ways that are more substantive than a Facebook click. Those can be great tools.
How did you feel about Occupy Wall Street?
I felt very hopeful about Occupy Wall Street. Mm-hmm. And I actually had the chance, because I was traveling during the period that was taking place, so I had a chance to visit different Occupy encampments, the original one in New York and also in D.C. and in London and in Seattle. And I had a chance to talk to a lot of folks in all the different cities that were a part of it. And I think there's a lot of hope, and there was a lot of things that have grown out of those encampments. I think there's been a shift in consciousness that's happened in this country, and I think Occupy Wall Street played a central role in that shift. Mm-hmm.
It was amazing to watch. I know that, and it was I think one of the most obvious forms of people getting out there and holding up signs and doing standing for what they believe in. I thought it was really fun to watch and interesting to watch, and I agree with you, hopeful.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that they were striving to do, and I saw this take place in different cities, is to create in those encampments the kind of community with the kind of values that they were trying to build on a larger scale. Mm-hmm. And no, it wasn't perfect, and yes, there were all kinds of problems, but it was a really incredible grassroots effort to build a different way of functioning as a society. And I think we desperately need that kind of creativity, and Occupy Wall Street embodied it.
My guest is Jen Marlow. She is the co-author of a book called I Am Troy Davis. And in addition to an event that's happening at Unity Temple in Oak Park tonight, she will be at Chicago Temple at 77 West Washington Street on Thursday at 6:30. It's free to the public. You can RSVP on Facebook, and our Facebook page has the link. The book is called I Am Troy Davis. Tell me about how you came upon this case, Jen.
I came upon the case in 2007 when Troy had faced his first execution date, and he survived that execution date by less than 24 hours. And I heard his older sister, Martina, speak on a news program called Democracy Now!, and she was talking about the narrowly averted killing of her brother. And she had been fighting for years and years to prove her brother's innocence. At the same time, she was fighting for her own life. She was battling breast cancer. And she was speaking about the connection, that double struggle, that she was fighting for her own life so she continued to fight for her brother's life. And I became curious about this brother whose innocence she was fighting so hard to prove. And I became curious about this woman herself, who was so clearly a force of nature. And I did some research online, and I found the report that Amnesty International had issued about Troy. And it really laid out the case in empirical black and white. It laid out the fact that the case against Troy had completely unraveled, and there was a mountain of evidence pointing to Troy's innocence, and yet Georgia was still determined to execute him. And so I got involved. I wrote Troy a letter, and we started a correspondence, which grew into a friendship, and that led to me meeting his family, and then that led me to working with his sister, Martina, on writing the book.
Okay. Well, Jen, I want to find out more about this. We'll talk about the book and definitely talk about the case of Troy Davis and tell people how they can come out and for the book launch. And it's going to be a book event and a commemoration at Chicago Temple. Oh, you have dogs.
Yes, that's Jupiter. He's saying hello.
Okay.
The dog is walking outside.
Hello, Jupiter. Okay. Hang on, Jen, okay?
Okay.
Jen Marlow is with us. The book is called I Am Troy Davis, and the event is this Thursday at Chicago Temple. We'll tell you more about it. A really fascinating story, fascinating case from a really fascinating woman and an activist. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Nick DiGilio on Chicago's very own 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of Trib Tower. We are here till 5 a.m. on a Tuesday morning. My guest right now is Jen Marlowe, and she is the co-author of a book called I Am Troy Davis. And before the break, we were talking about how she became involved in this case this guy who was in prison for many years, who was trying to prove his innocence of a murder, and was indeed executed on September 21st, 2011. And Jen, tell me about the details of the case.
Sure. Well, Troy was convicted for the 1989 murder of a police officer named Mark Allen McPhail in Savannah, Georgia. And at the time that he was convicted, there were 9 key witnesses who implicated Troy at trial. There was never any physical evidence that linked Troy to this murder. There was never any DNA, no weapon ever found, no fingerprints, no physical evidence. It was just this witness testimony. After the trial and after the conviction, years later, one by one, these witnesses came forward, and the vast majority of them recanted. 7 out of the 9 of them recanted, and many of them said that the reason they had implicated Troy to begin with had to do with police coercion and police threats and intimidation. And then many, many new witnesses came forward implicating a different shooter. This shooter was one of the 2 witnesses who had not recanted and was also the man who had given the police the name of Troy Davis. And so all these other witnesses came forward and said that this other man was actually the shooter and that they had either seen him or he had confessed to them. So whatever evidence there might have been against Troy at the time of trial, flimsy as that was even then, had completely unraveled since the trial. His conviction was based on witness testimony. Once the witnesses recant that testimony, there's no case left.
Now, what was the excuse for throwing? Did the court throw the testimony out?
Well, for years and years and years, the family struggled to try and get a retrial. So until 2010, none of this new evidence was ever heard in any kind of court of law, and all of the appeals and all those processes that people see as safeguards in the system, what a lot of folks don't realize is that those are a lot more about process and procedure than about seeking fairness and accuracy. So for all kinds of procedural reasons, the new witness affidavits were not submitted or were not considered sufficient. But again, it was all about procedural issues. Mm. In 2010, Troy was finally granted an evidentiary hearing, and that was ordered by the U.S. Supreme Court. However, at an evidentiary hearing, it's not a retrial. So in a trial, the burden of proof is on the prosecution. And in a trial, the defendant is innocent until proven guilty. In the evidentiary hearing, the burden of proof was on Troy.
Right.
Troy had to provide clear and convincing evidence of his innocence. And the judge did not find that the witness recantations did that. And it's very hard because it's like proving a negative. Troy was able to establish a lot more doubt as to his guilt. Every single witness recantation was another layer of doubt. But without physical evidence,
right,
without something that can conclusively say, here's hard evidence of innocence, how do you actually clear that enormously high legal burden of actually proving innocence? And the judge determined that Troy did not do that, even though in his ruling, the judge said that that there was additional doubt cast and that the conviction was not ironclad. But yet he denied Troy, and that gave the state of Georgia the legal grounds to proceed with the execution. And that's one of the reasons why the death penalty is so problematic. It's one of the reasons why you abolish the death penalty right there in Illinois, is because there are so many problems with the system, and the death penalty is irreversible.
How many states currently have the death penalty?
Well, 18 have abolished, and so my math is terrible. That means 50 minus 18.
That would be 32. Be 32.
So there's been basically a state that has abolished every year for the past 6 years, Illinois being one of them.
Yep.
And the most recent state to abolish was just Maryland. Connecticut was the year before that. And so really the country as a whole is is progressively turning away from capital punishment, as is the world. Two-thirds of the world no longer execute. There's no country in Europe executes. I mean, the United States is really an outlier in its insistence on continuing this policy of killing its prisoners. Our global colleagues, in terms, you know, we're one of the five top executing countries, and our global colleagues in that are China, Iran, North Korea, Vietnam, Saudi Arabia. So those are our global colleagues on this issue, and it's really a if we're trying to say that we stand for human rights in the world as a nation. This is one of the ways we can prove it. We can abolish the death penalty right here at home.
If someone wants to join the campaign to end the death penalty, how do they do that, Jen?
There's a lot of different ways. One of them is actually a name of an organization you just said, the Campaign to End the Death Penalty. Mm-hmm. And actually a few representatives from the Campaign to End the Death Penalty will be at the program on Thursday night. And Amnesty International USA has a very strong death penalty abolition program. Equal Justice USA is another great organization. Also, Equal Justice USA developed a really phenomenal discussion guide that goes with I Am Troy Davis for folks who might want to read it as part of their book club. There's already a great online guide. So there's a lot of different organizations out there that are doing that work. There's the National Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty. I would really suggest just, you know, researching some of those organizations and plugging in where it feels right.
How do you feel? Are you pleased with the result of the book, Jen?
Absolutely. And what makes me more pleased than anything else is that Troy's family is pleased with it, and they feel like it is given a voice to their struggle, their years and years of struggle, and that it exposes not only the injustices that happen in the court system, but really what the human impact of the death penalty. The death penalty didn't just kill Troy; it destroyed his family and his family, and they're so strong and they're so incredible. But Martina died 2 months after Troy was executed, and their mother died 4 months before Troy was executed because she couldn't. She literally died of heartbreak because she couldn't handle living through a fourth execution date. She had said goodbye to her son 3 times already. Their father had gone into a diabetic coma 6 months after Troy was sentenced to death because he stopped taking his insulin because he was so traumatized by what was happening to his son.
Oh,
so you begin to see the ripple effects of the impact of the death penalty, and Troy's family really is an example of that. It's not just the condemned prisoner that pays that ultimate price. There's many, many concentric circles around that.
Wow. Well, the book is called I Am Troy Davis. The event is 2 years later, We Are Still Troy Davis. It's a commemoration and a book event on Thursday, December 5th at the Chicago Temple, which is 77 West Washington Street. You can RSVP on Facebook. It's free. We have a link on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Nick D Show. Jen, a real pleasure talking to you. Good luck at the event. Good luck at the event tonight at the Unity Temple, okay?
Thank you so much. It was great to be on your show. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Jen Marlowe, and the book is called I Am Troy Davis. It's available. We have a link for the event this Thursday on our Facebook page. Nick DiGilio here on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.